When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Santana into the windup. The payoff pitch on the way. Swung on and missed. Strike three. He's done it. Johan Santana has pitched a no-hitter.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
And hey, 406, how we doing on this Wednesday morning? That's right, Wednesday the 31st, the trade deadline is over. July is almost over, and we are about to hit the dog days of August in our baseball seasons. Both teams made additions at the trade deadline, none of them overwhelming. None of them made that statement, certainly from the Yankees, who we were expecting Brian Cashman to go all in. Yes, Jazz Chisholm has made a huge, huge, massive impact in his first four games as a Yankee. First three games as a Yankee. As they are undefeated, he's hit four home runs in those first three games, the first Yankee ever to do so. And yesterday hits the big home run that wins them the game. You just heard it twice from Ricky Ricardo on The Fan. And just a massive impact. But ultimately, adding only him and Mark Leiter, who obviously is Al Leiter's nephew, who came in last night, got some strike, pitched well, got out of a jam, didn't allow Manfred man runner at second base to score in extras, did a good job, and he'll be an important piece. But ultimately, as high as the prices were, which I think we all understand that they were extremely high when you look at what some teams paid for pitching in this market, when you look at specifically what the Padres gave up for a, you know, as good as Tanner Scott has been this year, a rental reliever, to give up three of your top five prospects seems like a lot, but that was the kind of thing we expected Brian Cashman to do. We expected him to be willing to part with the bigger prospects in his system, to be able to part with Spencer Jones. And ultimately, nothing that big, nothing that significant other than Jazz Chisholm, who, again, can't downplay the significance of that move. It's been a game changer. The lineup with him and Stanton in it feels completely different. You got Ben Rice hitting eighth. That's it right there. You want to know the difference of this team in a nutshell? Ben Rice isn't hitting leadoff. He's not hitting cleanup. Ben Rice is hitting seventh and eighth over the last two games. Exactly where he belongs. Exactly where a rookie just starting his career playing first base for an injured Anthony Rizzo belongs. Not in the leadoff spot, but hitting seventh, eighth, ninth. That's where he belongs. That's what a functioning lineup looks like. And that's what the Yankees have had for the last four games with the addition of Stanton coming back from injury and obviously Jazz Chisholm. But ultimately, Brian Cashman didn't do enough. He did not go all in on this all-in season. He didn't start the year going all in by getting that extra starter or really adding a reliever or two to feel better about than Clay Holmes, who clearly is struggling as a closer, was a snake bit again last night. As we can have that conversation as well, if you'd like, at 808-1019, 888-808-1019. As for me, yes, I'll say it, bad luck. The guy made pitches left and right and got soft contact and was ultimately beat by his own doing with a wild pitch, I'll give you that. But ultimately, just and one of those death by a thousand cuts, impossible to predict. Well, it's not that possible to predict for him, but it's just amazing that it continues to happen even when he makes pitches. But they have a closer problem, and heading into the start of the year, the bullpen could have been added more. The rotation could have been added more. They could have brought in another bat. They did enough. They got Juan Soto. The year started off great, but weren't all in. And they followed suit at the trade deadline and did not give you that feeling of this year needs to be the year. We need more offense. We need more starting pitching. We need more bullpen help. They did just the bare minimum to feel like, okay, this team can go out there and still chase a championship. Not good enough from Brian Cashman. We'll see how it plays out. If Jazz Chisholm's going to hit two home runs a game, then he did do enough. But who could expect that? But obviously it's been a big addition. The Yankees win a game last night that they never win over these last 2 months. to be able to find out that right before the game, you find out Cole's not going to pitch. He's being shut down for general soreness. They have to start Will Warren. They fall behind 4-1. They come back with a Chisholm home run. It was a borderline. I think it was mainly Chisholm. It was a mainly Chisholm.
Yeah, but it broke your rule, though.
Yeah, because you didn't say the first name. That is true. It did break my rule. There's always an exception. The Chisholm home run is an enormous home run, and then obviously they blow the save and still win a game in extra innings when they haven't won a game in extra innings all year, it feels like. They've been the worst team, especially on the road, in extra innings in Major League Baseball, and yet all of that, over the last 2 months, any one of those three things stopped the Yankees from losing, stopped the Yankees from winning, whether it's Cole not starting, falling behind 4-1, or blowing the game in the ninth. Any one of those things happen, the Yankees don't overcome it. And yet they have overcome all three. They have a miracle win on Saturday night in Fenway, and now it's four in a row, and everything feeling completely different other than still waiting for that all-in feeling from this franchise. And then you get to the Mets, which I would tell you the same thing. Yes, they did. They added some arms, right? They added a couple of relievers, Blackburn for the rotation. Prior to this, they added Winker to the outfield. You already had Maton and Stanek in the bullpen as well. So they've added several relievers. They added another outfielder, and they added a rotation piece. But none of it feels like difference makers to me. None of it feels like, hey, I believe in this team. I'm going to go out and make sure we have a chance to win. It feels more of like, hey, they've done enough where they've stopped me in my tracks before I could sell off all the pieces I had envisioned selling off. I can't do that anymore because they played well enough, and I suppose I have to give them some help. And it might be considered shrewd moves, and they might end up working, and it might be a masterclass come the end of this season. But I still would have really liked to have seen them go out and, especially at guys who didn't get traded, like a Scooble or something like that, where the Mets could have went out and made a deal for a big-time starting pitcher that had control. Go out and get guys who had control. Go out and do things that seem to signify we believe in this team and we want to go win. Now, some of those moves weren't made. Some of those pitchers weren't traded at all. So it's hard to kill the Mets. I'm not. Not killing the Mets. But ultimately, the deadline just feels underwhelming for both teams. Both teams won big games. The Mets have bounced back from the two games in the two end games of the four game set against the Braves, followed up with two very good wins against Minnesota, scoring a ton of runs the other night and having a masterclass of a pitching performance from Anaya yesterday as they won 2-0 in a very clean, very quick moving, very fast game where Anaya struck out 11. Diaz gets a 4-out save. And this Met team, for right now, is as good as anyone, playing as well as anyone. And this offense, despite only scoring 2 runs yesterday, really makes you feel confident that they can be in this thing to the end. Right now, if you look at the standings and you look at where they're going the rest of the way here, I like the Mets' chances. I would have liked it better if they did a little more at the trade deadline. So that's where we are at the trade deadline. That's where we are with the two victories from the Mets and Yankees last night. That's where we are in the baseball scene as we get ready to turn the tables and turn the calendar to August. Yankees play today at 12:30. Mets later tonight. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls. Danny and Belrose. What's up, Danny?
Hey, good morning, Chris. How you doing today?
Good morning. How are you, sir?
Very, very good. I have to say when the Yankees institute some smooth jazz into the lineup, three games. I mean, that's history right there. That's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, it's been unbelievable, the impact. I've been trying to think of guys who have come and immediately had impact. If you remember, when Rizzo was traded to the Yankees in 21, they were playing the Marlins, and he had a dominant Marlins series. He killed it. He obviously didn't hit 4 home runs in his first 3 games. Chisholm is the first man ever to do that for the Yankees, but he had a great series. He won a couple games on his own. He cooled off eventually, which I would expect. You know, I don't think Chisholm's going to be this hot for this long, but for him to come in, play third base the way he's played, transition easily to that, be thrusted right in the middle of the lineup, come up with big hits, be the first guy that, it feels like in a while, the first guy to make a team pay for walking Judge and Soto, and hit that 3-run home run. It's been a huge, huge addition to the team. It's really made them not only help them win games, but it's helped the entire vibe of the team, along with Verdugo hitting and Torres hitting and Wells becoming a legitimate cleanup hitter. Like, those things have obviously helped, but it just feels like Jazz has really come through and embraced New York, embraced his role, and is a driving force of the team right now. So not many guys have come in and had an impact right away like this.
Yeah, he just loves being here, and I know they contacted Derek Jeter to get advice on, you know, on that trade, definitely. And you know, Jeter's going to give him the best advice, and because, you know, he obviously was watching him because he was a part owner over there, the Marlins, so he knew what they were getting.
He traded for him. He knows exactly who he is, and he's got his back. I mean, yeah, it was they went to Jeter for advice. I mean, this is just another way to give someone else credit besides Brian Cashman. Jeter made the trade, apparently. But, I mean, Jeter definitely, and CeCe Sabathia has been in his corner as well. It feels like a kid who is going to thrive on this. It feels like a guy who's already talked about the biggest crowds he's ever played in front of. I mean, Miami, you're hidden. I mean, let's be honest. No one cares. So to now play at Fenway, get thrusted right into Yankee-Red Sox rivalry, to then go play in Philadelphia, a building he's familiar with and a team he's familiar against, and good numbers against Wheeler, which led to the home run yesterday, or 2 days ago now at this point. But to get thrusted right into that, but to feel the tension of a Yankee-Philly rivalry, harkening back to the World Series in 09, or just the idea of two of the best teams in baseball battling it out, the juice is not there for Marlins series. And he seems like a guy who's going to thrive on the juice. There's no doubt about it. Frank in East Islip. What's up, Frank?
Morning, G-Mac. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Good, bud. One quick thing on the streaming services. I had Fubo TV. I cut the cord about 2 years ago. I had Fubo TV, and they just added Yes Network for this season.
Okay.
But the one thing that I ended up switching to DirecTV because of they dropped one of my wife's channels, HGTV. They sure didn't renew their contract, so we had to find something that was in the middle. And I ended up going over DirecTV. They have the MSG, they have the Yes Network, SNY, and also, which Fubo didn't have, they have the Red Zone as part of the medium package. So it was kind of the best one for me, but I think that's the all-around pretty much best bang for your buck as far as the channels you get.
Yeah. Now, I was looking into it. I know DirecTV was the one that had MSG. I know that for sure. So, yeah, I mean, listen, that's a good option, especially me. I need all the sports. So, and we'll see. Eventually, we're all going to get there. It's a strange world that we live in.
Do you think it gets cheaper? Because right now, like,
MSG, I don't know if it even gets cheaper.
$10 a game.
I know. That's crazy.
Well, I mean, think about it. They charge you $150 to go to a game, right? So
right, but you know, still, $10 to watch a game on TV? I don't know.
It sounds crazy, but they're charging it, obviously.
I understand. We'll see if they, you know what, I know a particular app that charges a lot of money, too. Doesn't mean, you know, people are going to do it. But if I mean, you got to just see $10 for it. It depends on what, if you're having people over, you're having your buddy over. Okay, maybe it makes sense. But every night, you're going to spend $820 to watch your Knicks.
Well, at that point, they want you to buy the monthly or
right,
yearly
no, I
subscription.
Understand. No, that's what I understand. So what's the monthly subscription? If you're just a basketball fan, can you subscribe for just the basketball season and then unsubscribe? I'm sure you could. Now that makes sense as opposed to paying all year for things you don't want.
Yeah, basketball season now is like October through July.
I know. Hockey season, forget about it. I think the first preseason game's tomorrow.
Exactly.
It's ridiculous. But I can't imagine paying $10 for a game. That seems high. I mean, I guess that's what they're doing. You're right. They're trying to just drive you to buy the entire package so you don't have to do a la carte. But this is if you were listening, this all has derived from the conversation about, you know, Peacock's playoff game from the NFL last year, Netflix getting involved with, I think, the Christmas Day game, right? The Christmas Day game is now going to be on Netflix.
I think that's what it is.
So, and just baseball, right? You got to have Amazon to watch your Yankees. You got to have Apple TV to watch on Friday nights. You have to have Roku to watch on Sunday morning. Like, it's part of the game. You had to have Peacock to watch Chiefs Dolphins last year. Get
so
used
I was
to
in
it.
Miami.
It's not going anywhere.
I was in Miami for that game, so it was on regular NBC on TV.
Right.
So that was, you know, again, so I
all right, so, all right, Rami's correct. You could always fly to Miami to watch the game as opposed to getting it on Peacock. You could subscribe to Peacock for a brief, or you could just fly to Miami and make a trip of it. You could fly around the country catching all the streaming games live in market, so you don't have to worry about this nonsense. I think that's the best idea yet. I think for anybody who's really concerned with having to sign up for all these different stupid streaming services, just travel the globe following the teams, and you don't have to worry about it. I think Rami's onto something. You could fly to Miami, catch that playoff game, see what else is going on, see where else you can, you know.
My point is you're not missing any local games, because if it's local for you, you're going to get the local game.
I understand. You're not going to miss any Giant games having to worry about the playoff game. And don't worry. You're not going to have to worry about missing any Giant games when it comes to the playoffs anyway. Paul in Buffalo. What's up, Paul?
Big Mac, how are you? Now, I listen to every game on the Odyssey app, and it's free. There's no issue trying to get it. Right. My question is, Ricky Ricardo isn't good. He's great.
Yeah.
And no offense to Shackle or Emmanuel Barbera, they're not in the same league. Why isn't he already the voice?
Well, they haven't made that decision yet. They've, you know, he does the Spanish radio. I don't think they wanted to have him not do that anymore. They had a plan in place to give those guys a handful of games, but they do a great job too. And you don't know, like, all the ins and outs of it, but I agree with you. I think that Ricky does a great job, and those calls are fantastic. He does a great job. I got to be totally honest with you. I'm a nut. I don't listen to much of the radio. I do occasionally, but even if I'm out or doing something, I'm the crazy guy who will DVR it and watch it at 1 o'clock in the morning if I have to. I'm cuckoo. So I listen to just to be fair and be honest and transparent with you guys, I listen to less Yankees on radio than a lot of people, because even if I'm in my car running errands, the only time is in previous lives, in my previous life, I'd sit around the pool, put the game on the radio. Like even now, I'll move heaven and earth to get a TV out there. I'll just wait and I'll say I'll go to the pool with the kids. I'll tell all my buddies who are there, don't mention the Yankee score or game, and then I'll go home and watch it whenever I can watch it. I am the king, like, constantly. I'm constantly behind. And I don't mind it at all. It doesn't bother me at all. Like, yesterday, I was making dinner. I forgot the game was at 6:30 and not 7. I'm not going to run to the TV at 6:30. I was making dinner. I was talking to my wife. I'll start the game at 7:30. I'll put the kids to bed, start the game at 8 o'clock. I don't care. It doesn't bother me at all. So that's I've gotten so used to over through the years, because when I worked in the afternoons, I would get home at 8:30, and I mean, I wouldn't start the game. I would sit home, maybe eat something, talk to my wife for a little bit, and then I wouldn't start a game until 9:30, 10 o'clock. So I'm so used to it by now that I'm constantly DVRing and watching things. So I'm never like, ooh, put the game on. I got to know what's going on. I'll just watch it later. But I agree. Those calls, Ricky does a great job. I think Emmanuel and Justin Shackle do great jobs too. Really, I think it's almost like Derek Jeter at shortstop. For can't imagining what life would be like without him, and to feel like that with John Sterling, how do you even go on with a Yankee broadcast without John Sterling? I think everyone's been Didi Gregorius. I think they've all done a really nice job. And we'll come back with more of Yankee Hot Stove right here on The Fan. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. Mick Monagle here with you. Rocking and rolling with you all the way to 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. Continue to take your phone calls. Maury, tonight is your night, bro. And we will find out how your night is going right after this.
Talk New York sports with us. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL on CBS Game every week on Paramount Plus.
Actually, don't call me up and tell me what you feel about me. Be nice. 4:30. Tell me what you think about me. All right, 4:30. McMonagle here with you. 888-808-1019. So I know last night the Yankees blew the game. Clay Holmes has now led the American League in blown saves. And you know how I feel. I've told you how I feel about it. I'm open to moving on from him as the closer. It's not like I'm dying on the hill of he's the closer, you idiots. But I will tell you, watching the game, It's hard to get on him when it's bad at bat after bad at bat and weak ground ball after weak ground ball. Like, yes, when it happens over and over again and it continues to happen, of course, you can't just sit by and say, what are you going to do? But it is bad luck. Like last night, he had good stuff, good movement, and I thought pitched really well and just got snake bit. And the biggest problem is, unfortunately for him, is that the Yankee infield defense isn't very good. You got to bring in DJ LeMahieu in extra innings. He's not a first baseman. They are bringing in a utility infielder who only recently with the Yankees over the last couple of years played first base. He's the defensive replacement for the first baseman. The second baseman in Gleyber Torres is lazy, loses his mind sometimes, and makes more errors than anybody else in the world at second base. And then Jazz Chisholm is just playing the first games of his career at third base. The infield defense isn't good enough. Now, there really weren't errors. I mean, Gleyber Torres could have turned a double play, I suppose, and mishandled the ball on the transition, but I don't know if he gets that double play anyway. But it's a frustrating blown save. I think a lot of his blown saves are like this. Every once in a while, he'll have a normal blown save where he walks the ballpark or gives up the home run, very rarely, but gives up a home run or a double in the gap, and it's clearly just, hey, he blew the save. And you add that to all the times he's snake-bitten, and that's how you get the most blown saves in baseball. But I watched him last night. I thought he was pretty good, and I thought the comments from Aaron Judge, the captain, speak pretty loudly about how he feels about this team. I know many people are going to say, hey, that's just him. What is he going to do? Badmouth the guy. He doesn't have to say all this. This was Judge on Clay Holmes in the postgame. That's our closer. I don't know what else to tell you. That's our guy. He's been our guy. I want him out there in any situation. Bases loaded and no outs or extra innings or bottom nine, top nine. That's our guy. You can ask anyone in this room if they want him out on the mound in that situation. He's been there, done that. We have faith in him. I really don't care what anybody else has to say. Those are strong words from Aaron Judge. Those are strong words from the captain about Clay Holmes, the closer, who he knows is going through it right now, who he knows the fan base is all over. You can ask anyone in this room if they want him on the mound in that situation. He's been there, done that, and we have faith in him. I really don't care what anyone has to say. I'm surprised he went that all in. Now, I don't know if Clay Holmes should be the closer or not. I'm open to moving him. I'm frustrated, and I'm pissed off that Brian Cashman didn't go out. And now we'll see what Leiter can be. Maybe within a week or two, Leiter becomes the guy I'm about to talk about, but Brian Cashman did not go out there and really get a closer, someone who could theoretically take Clay Holmes' job. Leiter comes in here and he falls in line. He's not the closer. Now, again, he might in a week or two if Clay Holmes continues to blow saves and he pitches well, but he doesn't come in with the cachet of a Tanner Scott or, you know, some of these other guys who've closed games before where, hey, now we have a legitimate option as a closer replacement. Not right away, not as soon as he walks in the door off the flight from Cincinnati. Leiter didn't do that. But it sounds like his team's got his back. And I'm sorry, watching. I mean, how many good hitters had to have bad at-bats in that inning? And the blown save before this, the outfielder fell down on a 99% catch probability. He fell down. And before that, the Gold Glove shortstop booted the easiest play you've ever seen. He got four outs and got a blown save. He's not perfect by any means, and you'd like to have a closer with more swing and miss stuff. And last night's not completely, it's not like the day they fell down or anything. It's on him. He blew the save, and the wild pitch clearly is the major part of the issue, too. He had two outs. Hey, go get Schwarber. Don't throw a wild pitch on the first pitch. Oh, totally on him. That's his blown save. But if you watch the inning, he got how many good hitters to give you bad at-bats and roll over these soft little ground balls? It's amazing the bad luck he has even when he makes his pitch. Even when he makes his pitch and gets exactly what he's looking for. It never turns into the double play. It never is just an easy out. It's constantly these weak little ground balls that become base hits. It's just, it's unbelievable. Maury in Belmore. What's up, Maury?
Tonight is your night.
Tonight is your night, bro. How we doing?
How you doing, Christopher?
I'm doing well.
Why didn't we get Chisholm a month and a half ago when we were struggling?
Well, yeah. I don't know if he was. I mean, I'm sure he was available a month ago. The Marlins.
He was available. They wanted to get rid of him. They were having an issue with him at the time. My point is, I love Cashman. I know you're a shill. You love him. He might be your godfather. My point is this. We could have made these moves sooner. It's frustrating to see this. And Clay Holmes, the reason why he blows so many saves is a closer's not supposed to let the other team hit the ball. They're supposed to
avoid
the ball. That's
just not true. It's just not true.
What? Think about it. The best closers.
Really? Who's the best closer in the history of baseball?
Come on. There's only one.
Who's the best closer in the history of baseball? Okay. Mariano Rivera.
Hello, Mo. Okay. Yeah, they closed Modell's down because
In 1990, do you know that he has pretty much the same strikeout rate as Clay Holmes?
Oh, come on, you can't complain.
I'm not comparing them as pitchers. I'm telling you flat out. You didn't bring in anything else into the argument. You said you need more strikeouts if you're going to be a closer. You have to strike people out.
Mariano Rivera.
I'm just telling you, Mariano. And right now, Clay Holmes strikes out just over one per inning. He's striking out nine per game. So he's striking out one batter per inning. In 1998, Mariano struck out six per nine.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, no. Yeah, it's a lot less than nine. So, I mean, yeah, but that doesn't matter. See, now he just said they're both league average. At the time in 1998, six might have been league average. That's not the conversation. Because then now you're telling me a whole league of closers didn't strike people out. The argument is closers need to strike people out. Why would that change from year to year, generation to generation? You can't put the ball in play. Bad things happen. That's what I'm told. Closers can't put the ball in play. I don't care what league average was. That's even a better argument. The entire league managed to close games in 1998 without striking people out. You can't tell me that you need to strike people out in the closer role when the greatest closer of all time did it at the same... Now, here's the thing. Clay Holmes walks too many guys. Totally, they're not... He's not in the same realm as good a pitcher with pinpoint accuracy. But the point of the matter is, he's striking people out at the same clip. So you can't tell me that you need to have these high strikeout rates to be a closer when the greatest closer of all time didn't. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. And I'll continue to say it because it's true. Mariano got soft contact. Mariano broke bats. He's throwing sinker balls that are getting these really soft ground balls. And plus, he had an infield of Scott Brosius, Derek Jeter, Chuck Knobloch, who, you know, eventually got the yips throwing it, but was always a good fielder. Tino Martinez at first base. That's the difference. They had a good defensive infield. Brent in Babylon. What's up, Brent?
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Good. So everything you just said, I agree with. I'm a frustrated Yankee fan at the deadline. I think Brian Cashman got exposed in two ways last night.
Okay.
One of them, Clay Holmes, he can't be your closer. His, set aside from last night, his stuff was good. But with him, it's like Murphy's Law. Whatever bad might happen.
Yeah, that I can't argue with. He does seem to have Murphy's Law going on right now.
And then also DJ LeMahieu. I know he was a late defensive substitution, but that guy cannot be in your lineup
if
you want to be a championship team. He's, you know, he didn't get Chisholm in. He just popped out foul. I love the guy from a few years ago. He's a respectable teammate, but he's just not going to get it done.
I don't know how that exposes Cashman he doesn't need to make a trade to replace DJ LeMahieu. Like, if you're talking about it being exposed at the trade deadline, and thank you for the call, he has other options right now, but Oswaldo Cabrera right now, play him. I don't care. You don't need to make a trade to do better than than DJ LeMahieu. I agree with you. DJ LeMahieu should no longer play at all. He should be cut. They should get rid of him and send a message that if you can't play, you won't be here. I totally agree. I've been saying it for 3 days. Totally agree. But the trade deadline didn't expose that because, yes, I wanted offense, but anyone could play for DJ shouldn't be playing. Oswaldo Cabrera should be playing over him. They have enough with Glaber and now Chisholm. That's enough to just not play DJ LeMahieu anymore and Ben Rice. There's no reason to play DJ. So I don't think the trade deadline exposed him with that. Yes, he still had. He did not go get a reliever unless Leiter becomes this. But he did not go get a reliever that instantly gives you the option to close with them as opposed to Clay Holmes. No. And he should have. He absolutely should have. They should have got a much better arm. Now, again, some of the deals were outrageous. I get that. What San Diego paid for Scott on a rental deal is crazy. But maybe you needed a crazy trade to go in there to have all, you know, to be all in this year. And they're, you know, they're still getting guys back. Yes, the old line of, you know, it's like getting another trade acquisition. Everyone hates it and mocks them for it. But they are getting Efros back. They are getting Hamilton back. And they are getting, Clark Schmidt back, who could put one of the starters into the bullpen. So we'll see. But I agree with you. Totally agree. Underwhelming trade deadline from Brian Cashman. I just don't know if he got exposed in that way. Eddie in Rockland, what's up, Eddie?
Hey, Chris, what's happening, buddy?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
I heard you on the Hard Knocks and stuff and hoping that there would be, a big push for a quarterback, which really never happened, but...
Wait. Hold on. The quarterback never happened, but are you saying the big push for a quarterback never happened?
Yeah, they never really offered anything. They never really talked to anybody else besides New England. If you're really going for a quarterback and you're at six, you're gonna do more than stroll across the hallway and say, what is it gonna take?
Eddie, I'm not even gonna argue with you. If you watch that episode of Hard Knocks and your take is the Giants didn't really try to get a quarterback, I don't know what to say to you. So we don't even have to have the discussion because it's so obvious they tried. Joe Shane has the conversation. He's like, I can't do this anymore. I can't wait around waiting for New England to tell me what's what. I got to move on or I got to find out. He was literally waiting to decide his entire draft on if New England was willing to make a trade. And then when New England called, he tried to talk them into it three different ways. They were desperate to try and move up to three. They weren't going to move up. They knew the Bears weren't trading, and Washington's not going to trade the pick to them to get the quarterback. They had one option to try and move up to three, and they tried to move heaven and earth to do it. If you don't see it that way, then I really don't know what to say to you.
Well, they didn't make an offer, did they?
Yeah, I mean, yes, they did. They talked parameters of what
the
deal would take.
What was the offer they gave New England?
They talked about the parameters of what the deal would take. He even said, what about, is that what it's going to cost? What if I gave you this? I forget the exact wordage, but there was a parameters of a deal being discussed on that phone call. Yes. Bro, watch it again.
Can't you get behind Daniel Jones?
I don't have to make up lies to do it. The Giants desperately tried to get another quarterback. That's just a fact. Now,
and who
said
was their quarterback? Jalen Smith, who were they saying in the thing that they were going, you want to be here? You really want to be here? That guy,
yes.
was that the quarterback?
Jalen Daniels, yes. Yes, that's who they they would have loved to trade up to get Daniels. They couldn't have, but they would have, absolutely. Would you trade up to get Jalen Daniels? Yes, I would. That's the head coach of the football team. What else do you need?
Right, and he didn't talk to anybody else about it.
No, I know. He only answered the direct question. Eddie, we're talking in circles. You don't think they tried to move up? Fine. Go live your life of ignorance. I don't know what to tell you.
All right, here's a scenario for you, right?
Yes.
You're on vacation, and at the corner of your eye, you see the Giannotti's coming your way, and you know Greg noticed you, but he's booking the other way.
Yeah.
Do you chase him down? And try to get like a Mickey Mouse breakfast out of him with that morning show money, or do you just let him take off?
Yeah, I have to think about that. I don't know. It's just a dumb question. If I saw Greg Giannotti on vacation, I would attempt to say hello to him. Yes, me and him are not the closest of friends, but I feel like We are fairly good friends. We've known each other for forever. We went to a Flight of the Conchords concert together about 100 million years ago. I feel like he's a good enough friend where if I saw him on vacation out of nowhere, I would be like, oh, what are the odds? What are the odds we're both on this Disney cruise? I don't know. Yes, I would. And I'd like to think that he would say hello to me. Does that make you happy? And if he's willing to buy me breakfast because he makes more money than me, I wouldn't say no. Eli in Washingtonville. What's up, Eli?
I got it. Hey, what's going on?
What's up?
First, my giant point. Listen, like I said before, like earlier this season, the Giants are going to regret not going after Justin Fields on a trade. And I'll tell you, it's going to happen. You're going to see this kid flourish, and the Giants drop the ball there. But to my Yankee point, listen,
yeah.
Of course, I'm disappointed like every other Yankee fan. I've been saying that, you know, Brian Cashman needs to go for a very long time. You know this. We had this discussion before.
Yep.
But listen, just remember this take. As long as Cashman is the GM of the New York Yankees, Aaron Judge is going to be the Dan Marino of baseball.
Gotcha. Okay.
You're going to see greatness, but the guy is not going to win a championship.
I mean, I keep hearing this, and like I'll defend Aaron Judge to almost anything. And even against this take, I could make the counterpoint, but you know what helps? I got to look back at the numbers of Dan Marino during his playoff appearances, but I'd like to think he wasn't as bad as Judge has been in some playoff series. If Judge wants to win a World Series so bad, maybe he shouldn't get one hit in an entire series against the Astros. Maybe if he hit like Bader in the last Astros series, maybe they don't get swept and they have a chance to win that series. So it's not just on Brian Cashman and putting the pieces around him. It's not like Aaron Judge has dominated the postseason and watched the rest of his team fail around him. He's done nothing. So it's up to him to actually perform too.
But listen, when you actually have a lineup that they could pitch around you constantly, that doesn't help either.
No, I understand.
Now
he's got Soto, and now the lineup, they've scored 47 runs in the last five games. Like, let's see what happens. Listen, they lead Major League Baseball in runs scored. Do you want to see how many times Aaron Judge led teams have led baseball in runs scored?
Yeah, but listen, of course the Yankees
got off
to a hot start. The Yankees got off to a hot start.
Right.
So of course these numbers are going to be inflated.
Oh, right. And then they had a bad stretch. So of course that's the more important part to look at.
Okay, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Do you feel confident in this team right now?
Yes.
As constructed.
Yes.
Can make a World Series run.
Absolutely, yes. Who's better?
All right.
Who's better? Who is better? The Orioles who can't win a series themselves? Who are trading for pitchers very good in Miami? Who's better? Who's the team the Yankees can't beat right now? The Cleveland Guardians, who I've been told all year long are not important and nobody in the Central matters because the Yankees are 17-2 against the Central? The Astros, who just got over 500 in the last week or two? Who's the team the Yankees can't beat on their way to the World Series? Who's that force that the Yankees, as presently constituted, cannot beat? They're not perfect, and they very well might lose. But this team, as presently constituted, right now, is good enough to make a run. You might not think so, and that's fine. And even if they don't, doesn't mean they can't. We got to see what happens. 449, McGonagall here with you on The Fan. We'll be right back.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Play fake. Jones rolls left. Throws left. Wide open for the touchdown is Bellinger.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right. Ba-dum-bum. You see, this is why I get the Cashman children stuff, because they'll never win under Cash. I'm trying to tell you, I'm disappointed. I'm pissed off about the trade deadline. But we can't just say that. We got to call up and go, they'll never win a damn thing. Like, and then it's just like, oh, my God. No, the trade deadline was underwhelming. It sucked, and they should have gotten a better out. They should have got a better closer, or at least a better reliever. And I would have wanted one more offensive piece. But the only thing I'll say is that unfortunately, a lot of the targets didn't get traded at all. So I don't know what they could have given up. It's hard when it's easier to look at a trade and go, oh man, the Yankees could have done that. But, you know, Diaz with Tampa Bay didn't get traded. India didn't get traded. Rengifo didn't get traded. Like, none of the real offensive targets got traded. And then you look at the bullpen, the one guy we all wanted was Tanner Scott. You got three of the top five prospects in your farm system for a rental? I mean, it seems like a lot. I would have justified it if Cashman did it, but it's asking. I mean, I would have been okay with it because of the all-in nature of it, but I understand the GM not wanting to do that. I'm shocked that they want to do it. The San Diego Padres make no freaking sense. They honestly make no sense. Why would you do that? Oh, because you're trying to win. Okay, trying to win. Okay. Then why would you trade Juan Soto? Like, they're contradictory things. You go out there, you add, you know, Dylan Cease, you add Arise, you add, you trade three of your top five prospects for a rental closer. And at the beginning of the year, you traded a 25-year-old Hall of Famer? Why? Why? Weird. All right, let's get back to the phones and end our show like we do so many times. This is when Brett saves his phone call for the last few minutes just so I can hit the music on him. What's up, Brett?
Chris, I turned the radio on, and mm-hmm. the first caller I heard today, on, I think his name was Danny,
mm-hmm.
and he was saying about taking Daniel Jones' lights out. And, you know, I'm saying, wow, Chris isn't defending, you know, our franchise quarterback. I think that guy owes us an apology, Chris. Wait,
okay. Did he say he was going down the Giants camp to take the guy's legs out? He said that he thinks teams are going to test
his legs, man. Yeah. No, you don't want that, Chris. That's our franchise. We don't need man. We need Daniel Jones, man.
Of course. Did I say, ooh, I hope you're right? Like, I don't understand. The guy said it. Should I have said, don't you say that? No one's going to do that, you bastard. Like, what do you want me
Chris,
to say?
Chris, you know what I don't understand?
I'm not sure.
You're doing ad nauseum for months now. Mm-hmm. Just, I want to get in your head here.
Try.
You keep arguing with everybody about, you see, I told you. They're, like, that's what you're holding on to. I told you they were trying to get a quarterback. Chris, this was one of the better quarterback classes, right? There was like four or five guys that, okay, the Giants getting a rookie anyway. That it didn't matter. That had nothing to do with anything. They moved on from Tyrod Taylor, right? They needed a guy, Chris. So I don't understand your logic. He wasn't going to play right away, probably.
Not for a year, but it would
have
been.
So that has no slight on Daniel Jones. I mean, you act like it has a slight. There's a lot of rookie quarterbacks around the league or guys not. I'm just saying, though, what, like, is that a slight against Daniel Jones that you keep pushing for months? Like,
do you want me to answer? Do you want me to answer? You're going to keep talking because I'll answer. I am not out to try and slight Daniel Jones. I'm telling you the truth. And if you don't realize what the significance of trading up and getting a quarterback as the third overall pick means for the future of Daniel Jones, yes, you're right. Because of the contract and because of the ability to let him sit for a year, I think they would have played Daniel Jones at least for a time anyway. But it would have been the end of Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones could have done anything. Daniel Jones could have led them to the playoffs. It doesn't matter. His career as a New York Giant is done the second they make that pick.
No, you're
that's
wrong
the
about
difference.
That.
No, I'm
you're
not.
Wrong, you're wrong.
Oh, yeah,
about
no, you're
that.
Right.
Not, no, you, no, 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 that's yeah, okay. silly. Yeah, okay. If they went to the playoffs, made a run. Now, you know what you just said is wrong.
No,
if
it's
they
not.
Made a run and won a Super Bowl, or
what
if
did
they
the
made a run, got
what
to
did the Chiefs
round,
do with Alex Smith? What did the Chiefs do with Alex Smith? They drafted Mahomes. Smith took him to the playoffs. They got rid of him. That's exactly what would have happened with the Giants. If you think otherwise, you don't know what you're talking about. You think they're going to draft a quarterback third overall and then let him sit there for forever while Daniel Jones with the injury history? It's not like Aaron Rodgers is playing and Love is sitting down. It's Daniel freaking Jones. I'm not trying to knock Daniel Jones. Somehow you got me doing it, but I'm just telling you. Daniel Jones, the minute they draft a quarterback third overall, is no longer the quarterback. He might be, you know, holding place for the current quarterback because they don't want to lose all the money by cutting the contract off a year earlier, but that would have signified the end of Daniel Jones as the leader of the franchise. He still has an opportunity to continue to be that now, whether I think he will or won't. But that's always good to talk to you, Brett. It never ceases to amaze me. You Daniel Jones defenders, my goodness. All right, that's it for me. Everybody have a great day. Have a great Wednesday. You got the Yankees coming up early. Mets taking on the Twins yet again. Tomorrow, I got you for a five-hour midnight ride starting at midnight. We'll get into more of the football and the Daniel Jones conversation then. Everybody have a great day. Warm-up show is next. I'm out of here. Rami, thank you. See you guys later.
Sports Radio 101.9.